Hierdie inset word aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.
Baie welkom op die ABBA-program Krag van die Bybel. Die woord van die Here om dit werklik te kan belewe as 'n krag in moeilike tye, in maklike tye, in alle omstandighede. Kan ons, omdat ons die Gees van die Here ontvang het as sy kinders, kan ons juist uit daardie identiteit die woord van die Here lees en dan word dit 'n krag. En daarom is dit so heerlik om vandag elkeen uit te nooi en welkom te heet hier om saam met ons die woord te oordink. Juist in hierdie adventtyd, wanneer ons dink oor die koms van Jesus, van God, die Seun van God na hierdie aarde. Ons luister in die eerste deel van die program soos gewoonlik na die Bible Project potgooi reeks en ons is op die oomblik besig met die Exodus Way en vandag so episode is How Did Israel End Up in Egypt? Interessant nie, mens vra nie gewoonlik hierdie vraag nie. Ons dink ons weet, maar hoe het dit werklik gebeur? En ons wil dit juist so lees, dat ons, en luister ook na hierdie gesprek van Tim en John, omdat dit so belangrik is, dat ons die woord inneem, soos wat God het bedoel het, en soos wat het geskryf word, die Here praat in mensetaal met ons. En daarom is dit ook, kom die woord in 'n sekere tyd tot sekere mense, en is dit vir ons goed om dit te verstaan. En om dan te sê, maar dit is wat die Here vir daardie mense daardie tyd sê, en dit is hy, dit is wat hy vir my nou sê hier, want die woord is ewig, en die Gees werk in ons, dat ons dit verstaan en elkeen dit kan uitlewe. Maar hierdie gesprek van Tim en John maak dit net makliker, want nou kan ons 'n bietjie van die tyd en hoe dit gebeur, dat hulle, dat dit opgeteken is en so opgeteken is. Ons wil graag werklik in baie rustigheid en meditering en reflektering die krag van die woord van die Here ervaar. Jy is ook baie welkom as jy, vooral in hierdie tyd wat mense nou gereed maak is na die einde van die jaar en is stil en party mense voel alleen, party mense het soveel herinneringe wat goed is, maar ook jou terugneem na tye in jou lewe. En daarom is dit so nodig dat ons naby die woord is. Maar Abu gee ook die berading, vrye berading by Kaapse Kansel. Jy kan inskakel by 021-180-5744. En die eerste optie wat jy gaan kry is counseling, berading. Skakel gerus deur en dan praat jy met 'n berader in groot vertroue en confidentialiteit, sodat jy kan lekker gesels en dan saam ook bid met die berader. Jy kan ook na Abu se webwerf gaan, www.abbo.org.za, of Maritjie skakel by 084-501-1102 en gesels oor berading en as jy ook belangstel om verder opleiding daarin te kry. Excuse toch, maar die grootste nuus, die grootste vreugde, die diepe vreugde, soos Psalm 16 vers 11 sê, Dawid sê hoe diep dit opborrel van vreugde in die Here in hom. En ons belewe dit nou, omdat ons weer Kaapse Kansel terug is op die lag. En jy kan nou, as jy op die app luister ook, of waar ook al, jy kan inskakel as jy in die kar is, of 'n radio het by jou skakel dan in op AM 729 en dan kan jy dit hoor. Helder en duidelik op die grootste area van die Weskaap. En mense baie verder kan ook op 'n mooi weerdag ook daarna luister. Mense van Namibië kom en sê, maar hulle kon dit hoor. Hulle luister na van ons programme as dit helder en duidelik is deur die weer ook. Want dit het ook 'n invloed. Maar die groot ding is, baie mense kan weer dit hoor. En ons is so dankbaar teenoor die Here daarvoor, dat hy vir ons hierdie pad oopgemaak het. Oopgemaak het, ons praat van pad. Die Bible Project se potgooi gaan juist oor dit, The Exodus Way. Met vandag se tema, Israel Deliverance and the Song of the Sea. Die Exodus thema in die Bybel is baie groot. Dit loop dwars deur die woord. En vandag gaan dit oor Exodus. Die werklike Exodus, soos wat dan vir ons die verhaal van die verlossing van Israel uit Egypte gegee word deur die woord. Daar is drie lyne wat ons vind en waaroor Tim en John gaan gesels. Dis die pad uit Egypte, ja, die pad uit slavernij, en baie van ons kan daarmee ook associeer, wat ons ook al beheer in hierdie lewe, tot erge verslaving. Die pad uit Egypte, uit die slavernij, en dan die pad deur die wildernis, waarmee ek seker is, baie van ons ook, dit ook mee kan associeer, want allemaal van ons belewe in hierdie lewe, een wildernis. Op een of ander tyd, op een of ander wyse, gebeur dit. En dan die derde thema, die pad in na die beloofde land. Ook dit kan ons reeds nou belewe, hoewel die volle daarvan nog kom. Maar ons kan dit in volle belewe in ons gees, omdat ons die gees van God ontvang het, en dit is wie ons is. Dis my identiteit. Nie of mense van my hou nie, nie of ek sukses is in die lewe volgens mensstandaard nie, nie omdat ek so kar ry of so huis het, of wat ook al die geval is nie. Nee, die identiteit wat ek het deur die gees. En so kan ons reeds daar die erfenis, soos Paulus het ook beskryf, ontvang. Wat God vir ons gegee het in Jesus ons Here. Hierdie drie lyne, uit Egypte, deur die wildernis en dan na die beloofde land, is ook 'n weerspeeling van Moses se eie lewe, voordat die uittog uit Egypte begin. Daar is baie beslissende momente in hierdie verhaal van Moses, van geregtigheid, justice soos dit in Engels gesê word, en verlossing in die Exodus story. Die Pascha en Israël se deurtog deur die see, dis ook die pad uit Egypte. In hierdie momente het later die rede geword vir wat ons vandag ook ken. Na Christus is die nagmaal en die doop. Tim en John bespreek vandag in die potgooi hoe die drie thema's, uittog, deurtog en intog, prachtig verwoord word in die lied van die see, wat gesing word nadat hulle deur die see getrek het, in Exodus 15. Lees dit ook gerus in jou meditering en oordenking. Kom ons luister nou na Tim en John en Bible Project se potgooi, wat dan gaan oor Israel's Deliverance and the Song of the Sea. Bly gerus ingeskakel.
Welcome to Bible Project Podcast. We are tracing the theme of the Exodus Way. Exodus means the way out. And what we're discovering is that the entire Bible is about the way out of slavery. In today's episode, we arrive at the Exodus story proper. That is, the story of Israel being rescued out of slavery in Egypt. Now, in this story, Israel's rescued from danger two times. The first is on the night of Passover, when disease covers the land, threatening to take life from every family. But there's a way. Death won't enter a house that's been covered with the lifeblood of a blameless lamb. The way out of slavery requires something we're unable to give for ourselves.
God will accept a blameless representative who stands over a house and look on that house as a group of people that are right with me in the midst of a land that's full of people who are not right with me. So that's the first rescue, from death.
Then, as Israel leaves Egypt, Pharaoh's army comes chasing after them, pinning them up against the chaotic sea.
The people freak out, and they're like, you just kill us in Egypt. Like, why'd you bring us out here? And Yahweh says, stand still and see the salvation of Yahweh.
In the middle of the sea, a passage opens up. The way out of slavery is through what looks like certain death. So two stories of rescue, one through a night of death, the second through a sea of death.
Both Passover and the passage through the sea, within the Hebrew Bible, are these coordinated images of salvation. Both are reflected on by later biblical authors, often blended together as a single act of salvation.
Today we look at the way out of slavery in two rescues, Passover and baptism. And we see that this isn't something just for ancient Israel. This is something for us too.
The most important ritual practices that have been a part of the Jesus movement from the very beginning are rooted in those two deliverance stories.
Today we begin the way out. Thanks for joining us. Here we go. Hey, Tim.
Hi, John.
Hey, we're talking Exodus.
Yes, we are.
And while the Exodus is an event that took place in the scroll of Exodus, and then as we'll see, continues on, it is also a template.
It's part of a pattern. It's a pattern template that the biblical authors saw being repeated generation after generation, and also a pattern that they could see at work in the larger multi-generational history of their whole people. And then for Jesus and the apostles became a way of that template or cycle of motifs to think about the history of the whole world. So really it's a meta story of a way of imagining the whole of the world, but it feels like it emerges out of a particular historical experience of a memory of this family of ancient Israelites. And the template goes something like this. There is a liberation out of some sort of terrible circumstance in the book of Exodus. It's slavery. So exodus, it's a Greek phrase. It means the road out of slavery, freedom, liberation. Then the journey takes them through the wilderness. We've been calling it the road between. But the reason that you're brought out and taken on the road between is to get to somewhere, and that is to get to the promised land to be with God. And so that's the road in. So that's essentially the three-part movement, and it's that large three-part shape that the biblical authors see being repeated on the smaller levels of individual generations, and then also on the larger scales throughout the history. So we've looked at that story template in the creation stories. We've looked at it in the stories of Abraham and his descendants in Genesis. And now we're just going to take a conversation and actually just see the template at work that begins in the actual Exodus story. So you could say we're talking about the Exodus in Exodus. Just as a quick nod forward, Jesus, in the gospel according to Luke, has a post-resurrection Bible study with his followers. And he summarizes the storyline of the Hebrew Bible as the Messiah going into suffering, then being raised out the other side into glory so that forgiveness of sins can be announced to all the nations beginning at Jerusalem. And in a way, an anointed one, God's blessed, chosen one, who goes into a period of suffering and then is vindicated up out of that suffering into glory, only to share it with everybody else. In a way, it's sort of like the same storyline in terms of God's chosen blessed ones going into slavery, oppression, liberation out of slavery on the way and arriving at the promised land, the blessing.
You're saying like, look, the point of Israel was to be the blessing to the nations. So they are the anointed, chosen people. But they go through suffering.
Largely because of their own sins and failures.
And then, but then back out the other side with the hope of then blessing. And then the twist then is, well, then there's got to be a faithful Israelite who won't screw things up. But then what you're drawing attention to is the template's still there. That faithful Israelite, the anointed one, will go through suffering and oppression and then back out the other side.
That's
so you're saying that Jesus is looking at the Exodus saying, that's what I'm going through.
There really is this mega template of God giving the blessing as a gift. That gift faces God's chosen ones with a choice. Success or failure, right? Doing good or doing bad. Doing bad leads to ruin, suffering, hardship. But God remains committed and will somehow bring new creation out of that hardship to bring the blessing after all. And just that, it's the little story arc.
And you could think of the whole big history of the cosmos that way. God rescued, created out of chaos, rescuing creation in a way, and then wants to lead that through into new creation.
So that's the big three-part movement. What I'd like to do is just a quick overview how the three movements work in Exodus proper, specifically the first movement. But I want us especially to focus on the famous Song of the Sea in Exodus 15, because remarkably, it actually contains within itself almost the whole story in a nutshell. And it's like a pivot moment that looks back at the first part, the liberation out of slavery, the road out. It anticipates the road in between, and it anticipates the road in. So the poem almost tells the whole story within itself. But first, let's just do a quick overview of how the Exodus story works from Exodus chapter 1 leading up to that song in Exodus 15. So Exodus 1 begins with the family of Israel down in Egypt. It begins with a genealogy of the descendants of Jacob that went down at the end of Genesis. And it says they were fruitful and multiplied. They became many and strong very much. Pharaoh doesn't feel great about this, the king of Egypt. So we've talked about this. We actually have, referencing back to an early podcast series, we had a whole series going through all the scrolls of the Torah. And I think we had three episodes just on these early chapters of Exodus. So we cover that in a lot more detail than we will right now. But Pharaoh sees a threat to national security. But if they were to enslave this immigrant population that's multiplying, he sees a great economic
boon.
So he enslaves them. And it's terrible. And the Israelites cry out.
It's terrible for the Israelites.
The Egyptians are winning, as they say. So what God does is raise up a deliverer. So that's the first thing, from blessing, and then some sort of snaky trickster move results in slavery. So we go from blessing to slavery.
Because you're saying, we talked about the three movements, and you're saying the road out movement has a bunch of subpoints. And that first subpoint is that you go from a state of blessing to a state of oppression.
And it, again, it's Exodus, but it's being set on analogy to times where that's happened in Genesis too, where you went from the blessing of the seventh day, Garden of Eden given to Adam and Eve, but there's a snaky trickster there. And poor decisions are made and you find yourself in the land of dust and death.
Okay.
So similar story arc here, where you begin with blessing, a snaky trickster, and then you result in slavery. And so God's response to that sequence in Genesis 1 through 3 is to promise the seed of the woman who will come to stomp on the head of the snake. God's response to Israel being enslaved is to raise up a seed of a woman, a Levite woman. This begins in Exodus chapter 2. And the sequence from Exodus 2 through 4 is all focused on Moses. So Moses is rescued out of the waters. This is really fascinating. So he's rescued, he's put in his little basket, which is called by the same word as the boat that Noah made, the ark. In Hebrew, it's called that. And he's put into the waters, and then he's rescued out through the waters. In Exodus chapters 1 through 4, there are seven women featured in the story, all of whom play key roles in the deliverance of the people, their liberation from slavery. If any one of these seven women hadn't responded faithfully, the Exodus wouldn't have happened.
Is this the turn up the volume on the seed of the woman motif?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then also how all of these women, so we're talking about the two Hebrew midwives, Shifra and Pua, then we're talking about Moses' mom, and then Moses' sister, so Jochebed and Miriam. Then you've got Pharaoh's daughter, and then Pharaoh's slave girl. And then at the end of the sequence in chapter 4, Moses' wife, his Midianite wife, Zipporah, saves his life too. So you have these seven women, and all of them, their stories are told in ways that echo the Garden of Eden story. It's as if they are like redeemed Eve figures who are inverting the folly of Eve by being faithful and wise and rescuing life through their wisdom and intuition. It's so rad.
They become Lady Wisdom.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And so the seed of the woman is saved by these seven amazing women, wise women. And that's a big part of the story arc there. So the raising up of the rescuer is all about men and women together being faithful, wise images of God. Yeah, super cool. But Moses actually isn't super wise. He becomes an adult and, you know, famously goes out one day and he sees an Egyptian slave master beating an Israelite slave, and he just straight up murders him and hides him in the sand. And then that results in him having to flee, and he goes into exile for a long time. And he meets that Midianite woman and then marries into a Midianite family. And out shepherding the flock one day, that's when he's up on a high hill and he meets God. So that's the sequence. And what's interesting, that sequence right there, Moses is being one of the enslaved Israelites, is saved through the waters of the Nile River. And then that lands him in the house of Pharaoh. And then he tries to send out his hand and strike an Egyptian to save his people. And it doesn't work. So then he has to flee into the wilderness. But there in the wilderness, he's up on a mountain called Mount Sinai, where he meets God in flame and fire. It's as if Moses individually has gone through his own kind of pre-Exodus journey.
Okay. He gets to go on his own. Yeah.
But every step of it both matches and kind of is a little twist on the journey that all the people will take later. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Okay. Wow. A little mini Exodus before the Exodus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's something significant. He's going to be like the prophet, the spokesman for God. And it's sort of like the prophet experiences in his own life the story of his people, that his people will play out in macro version. But it's sort of like it's what shapes him to be the person who can then lead the people on a similar journey, something like that.
And the mountain he goes to see the burning bush, that is Mount Sinai.
Yeah, and actually God says, hey, you're going to liberate the people, or I'm going to liberate the people through you, and then you're going to bring the people right back here.
Yeah.
So he goes back to the people in slavery. They go out. There's a great confrontation. And this time God sends out his hand in the plagues, and it's effective. And Moses sends out his hand, but never to strike, just as a symbol. And then they go through the waters in the wilderness to the mountain. Okay, so after burning bush, Moses is commissioned, then we come back, and this begins the long sequence. It's Exodus 5 all the way through chapter 11 is the 3 + 3 + 3 strikes or plagues on Egypt. Mm-hmm. So there's 9 told in that section. And then in chapters 12 and 13, it's the 10th and final plague, which is Passover.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is there's actually 2 conflicts with Pharaoh. There's all of the plagues that build up, build up, build up. Pharaoh relents and lets them go. And then he regrets it. And then he chases after them again. And then there's another showdown. So there are actually 2 showdowns with Pharaoh.
Hmm.
The plagues mm-hmm. and then...
Then the waters.
Then at the waters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And then there's 2 victory moments then, as it were. Passover is the culmination of the 10 plagues. And this is 10 chances that Pharaoh had to humble himself before God. And even if he seems to change his mind for a minute, he goes back on it. There's the multiple times where mm-hmm. he's like, okay, you can go.
Mm-hmm.
And then the moment the plague ends, he's like, no, I changed my mind.
Yeah. The role of the plagues is the role of justice, right?
Yes.
And so also the waters submerging Pharaoh then is also of a type of justice.
Yeah. They're the type of justice where God hands people or a land over to decreation, to experience the outworking of their destructive choices that spread chaos and disorder in the land.
Yeah.
So the plagues are riddled with vocabulary of the creation and the flood story, but then also so is the demise of Pharaoh at the sea.
Yeah. Is that the third subpoint? I don't know how much we're trying to delineate these points.
Yeah, so the first one is you go from blessing to slavery.
Blessing, slavery.
And the raising up a deliverer.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the escalating conflict.
Escalating conflict, which you can frame it as God bringing justice?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. God bringing justice. But what that means is God handing people over to the ruinous consequences of their decisions,
okay.
which is often described in de-creation language,
okay.
the unraveling of creation.
Yeah, handing over.
Mm-hmm.
And then fourthly, there's a victory of sorts, is that connected?
Yeah, God invites a remnant to engage in something that will signal their rescue and their safe refuge in the midst of the terrible judgment or the decreation.
Okay. So the decreation happens twice.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Plagues and then the flood.
Yep. And the rescue happens twice.
And the rescue happens twice. Okay.
That's right.
And so the first rescue is Passover.
So Passover is all about that God's going to send the ultimate plague. So on the night you go into the house, you've already selected a lamb, you've slaughtered it that day, and you and maybe your neighbors, you know, if they didn't have enough to get a lamb, you hunker down in the house and you have unleavened bread, you have wine, you have lamb. And that's all it says in the story. In later tradition, it went on to accumulate more symbolic foods and so on. But the key is to put the blood as a sign on the door.
Yeah, this is the blood of the lamb that you've prepared to eat.
Yeah, and multiple times God says, I will go through Egypt and I will strike the firstborn in every house. And it's an inversion. It's bringing upon Egypt what Pharaoh did to the Israelites, which is to kill all of their sons.
Yeah.
And so now God is demanding the firstborn sons of Egypt. That's another measure for measure type of punishment.
And God says he'll go through and do it.
Yeah. And God says many times, I will go through, I will strike, except one time.
When it actually happens.
In Exodus 12, verse 23, and then Yahweh says, when I pass over Egypt and I see the blood on a door of a house, I will pass over and I will not allow the destroyer to enter in.
Hmm. So interesting.
It is super interesting. And what later generations of Jewish readers saw in that destroyer is a metaphorical description of a disease, like a plague, especially because the same language is used to describe an event later in the life of David.
Mm.
And it's an actual, like a plague, a disease.
It's decreation again.
Yeah, it's decreation. It's the undoing of life.
And God's saying, I'm going to let it loose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm letting it loose.
Yeah, like the waters of the flood.
Like the waters of the flood.
In fact, The waters of the flood are called the destroying waters.
Oh, really?
The mashchit. Wow. It's the same word.
Okay.
So it's as if God's unleashing a flood of disease.
Yeah.
But inside the house, there can be this refuge if that house is covered by the blood of a lamb that is tamim, which is the Hebrew word for whole or complete. It's translated without blemish of an animal, but when it talks about people, like Noah was tamim, which meaning he was complete in character, he was righteous, and he walked with God. So God will count that house as being in right relationship with me. The destroyer can't touch that house.
Because of the blood of the animal.
That's right. So here the image is decreation is the sad end result that Yahweh is handing Egypt over to because of Pharaoh's choices that have led to this. But Yahweh is much more merciful than Pharaoh because Pharaoh didn't provide a way out for anybody when he was killing all the sons. But Yahweh will allow anybody.
Yeah, it wasn't just for Israel.
No, no. In fact, the story gives strong hints that many Egyptians took refuge in the Israelite houses, because we're also told that when Israel leaves, we're told that a mixed multitude went out of Egypt with them. So a bunch of Egypts that are like, I'm not
down with Pharaoh's regime
anymore. Not down with Pharaoh anymore, yeah. So that's rescue number one. God will accept a blameless representative who stands over a house and look on that house as a group of people that are right with me in the midst of a land of violence and that's full of people who are not right with me.
Becomes a shelter.
Yeah, a refuge.
A refuge.
Shelter. Mm-hmm. So that's the first rescue, is a rescue from death.
Yeah, from plague.
Mm-hmm. So then the people go out. Pharaoh's like, get out of here. Everybody, get out of here. Mm-hmm. So he sends the people out. That's in chapter 12 and 13. Then he has a change of heart in chapter 14. Mm. And he says, what have we done? We let the people go. So he gets all of his armies, best chariots, hundreds of them, and they come racing after. And so this is in chapter 14. Then the people have wandered to the edge of a body of water called Yam Suf, which means the Sea of Reeds, which could refer to any one of hundreds of bodies of water.
Hmm. It's often translated Red Sea.
Oh, the Red Sea. That's right. Yeah.
Which there is a body of water.
There's a body of water called the Red Sea.
Near Egypt.
Literally called the Sea of Reeds.
Okay.
And that victory then is Yahweh tells Moses to lead the people by the sea. The people freak out and they're like, why didn't...
Yeah, we're trapped.
You just kill us in Egypt. Like, why'd you bring us out here? And Yahweh says to Moses, stand still and see the salvation of Yahweh. And that's one of the key appearances of the word salvation in this story. And then that's the moment where the water split and the dry land, Yabashah from Genesis 1, appears and the people go through. And then when Pharaoh's chariots enter in afterwards, the waters turn back on them. Oh, okay. So at Passover, the death of a blameless representative becomes the passageway from death to life.
Okay.
Whereas here, passing through the waters that look like certain death is the passageway into life.
Yeah. In both situations, they are passing through. I guess in the first one, you're hunkering down in the refuge and the chaos is passing over you. But in the second one, you actually are passing through the chaos.
That's right. Yeah, it's good.
And with the one, you're marked by a house with the blood of a tamim animal, and God protects that house. There's no like ark in the second one. They're just on the dry land. You know?
Yeah.
The passageway is the ark.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
The passageway is the shelter.
The dry land kind of is their shelter in the midst of the chaos waters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can imagine walking through those waters, seeing the chaos water, and how just scary that would be. But also, back in Egypt, when the plague's coming through, the destroyer, like, you're in your little shelter, but outside is, like, disease and death.
Yeah.
Like, that's also really intense and scary. They feel
surrounded
very similar.
By it. Yes. Yeah. I mean, they are set on analogy to, they're right next to each other.
Yeah.
Like, Passover is set right next to the story of the deliverance as the sea. And both are reflected on by later biblical authors as often blended together as a single act of salvation.
Okay.
So what's interesting, just a quick little side note here, the most important ritual practices that have been a part of the Jesus movement from the very beginning are rooted in those two deliverance stories.
Yeah. The Passover meal is what Jesus does to say that this is my body and it's my blood that we call communion. Mm-hmm. And then going through the waters, we symbolize a baptism.
It's kind of baptism.
Wow.
Paul, the apostle, in 1 Corinthians 10, it's not his main idea, but it's just a little side comment that he makes. He's writing a letter to first century people, some of them Jewish, most of them not, in the ancient city of Corinth in ancient Greece. And he says, I don't want you to be unaware, brothers and sisters, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea and were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea.
Yeah, yeah.
He starts retelling the Exodus story. First of all, saying our ancestors, and that's like, whoa, apparently these non-Israelites have been grafted in to the family history. But then he calls it being baptized into Moses through cloud and sea.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It's very cryptic, but you kind of, I can start to maybe understand what he's saying now. Mm-hmm. Baptized into Moses.
He's using the same word as Christian baptism.
Yeah.
And he's assuming a whole bunch of teaching that he's done and that you can see Peter assumes too in his letter, where the stories of the flood and the stories of Israel going through the waters were viewed as the images that help explain the meaning of Christian baptism. Hmm. And he actually calls it being baptized into Moses in the cloud and the sea. The cloud he's referring to the protective cloud of God's presence.
You haven't mentioned that yet, but in the story.
In the story, the cloud of God's presence kept the Egyptian armies at a distance until Israel went into the sea. Hmm.
So you're being baptized into the rescue of God. And where do we get the most vivid image of that rescue? Or what's like kind of this key template for that?
Yeah.
It's Moses in the cloud at the sea going through the chaos waters being rescued from slavery.
Yep, that's right. And not five chapters earlier in Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, he also calls Jesus, 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7, he calls the Messiah our Passover lamb who has been slain. So both Passover and the passage through the sea within the Hebrew Bible are these coordinated images of salvation through a force of death, whether disease or waters, and then safely brought through out to life on the other side. Hmm. And that's the culmination of this conflict between good and evil, between the forces of chaos and the remnant that's brought through.
Wow. So you see Jesus in the way out, like through all these beats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, sorry, which ones are you?
Okay, so if the road out, the first kind of part of the Exodus has four or five sub points, you kind of see Jesus like woven through like all of it in a way.
Or that he is tapping into all of these themes by choosing Passover week.
Yeah.
Ooh, also, he called his upcoming death that would happen the week of Passover. Remember when those two disciples come up to him and they say, hey, can we sit on your right hand and your left when you rule in glory? And he says, can you drink the cup that
That's
I...
That's the Passover cup.
And can you be baptized with the baptism that I'm going to undergo?
Oh.
Isn't that good?
Oh.
So again, Passover and the deliverance through the sea.
Yeah.
They're different moments in the story, but really, they're closely tied together.
I guess I'm just saying, like, he is Israel going through the sea.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also the Tamim sacrifice that protects Israel.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's also the deliverer raised up to lead Israel out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he's...
Yeah, he's the package deal. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. So I said where I wanted to lead us to
was
Exodus 15.
Okay.
And we've got there.
All right.
So I'll just summarize the main point of Exodus 15. It's a short, poetic retelling of the deliverance story up to that point. And then it pivots on a little hinge that says what Yahweh just did, he is the kind of God who... He just does this. And in fact, he's going to do it again. And then the last part of the poem is painting a future picture of how Yahweh's going to do it again. And this is the culmination to the story. So the story culminates in a poem that says, the thing you just read is the template for something Yahweh's going to do again. That seems to be the design of this poem as a whole.
Okay.
So having said that, let's just take a quick tour through what is called the Song of the Sea, Exodus 15. Part one of the Song of the Sea. So this is the people have just been delivered. They're standing on the seashore. The Egyptians have just been vanquished.
And they sing a song.
And they sing a song. First worship song in the Bible.
Hmm.
So the first part goes from verses 1 through 10. I'll let you do the honor of starting.
1 through 5?
Yeah, let's just do 1 through 5.
1 through 5. I will sing to Yahweh, for he is highly exalted. Horse and its rider he has hurled into the sea. Yahweh is my strength and my power. He has become my rescue. This is my Elohim, and I will praise him, my father's Elohim, and I will exalt him. Yahweh is a man of war. Yahweh is his name. Chariots of Pharaoh and his army he cast into the sea. His choice officers, they sank in the sea of reeds. The deep abyss covers them. They went down into the depths like a stone.
Mm-hmm. Fairly straightforward. We're recounting poetically the mm-hmm. thing that just happened.
Yes.
In the narrative.
However, he calls the Sea of Reeds the deep abyss.
Yes, yes. From Genesis 1.
Genesis 1.
Yep.
Gets cosmic with it.
It gets real cosmic. That's yeah. right.
And then this word rescue has become my rescue. That's mm-hmm. the word salvation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the Hebrew word Yeshua, which is Jesus' Hebrew name.
He's become my Jesus.
He has become my Yeshua. So notice the hurling into the sea was mentioned first and last.
Okay.
And then in the center is sort of like the lesson that you draw about Yahweh's character from that deliverance, which is he's my strength, my power, my rescue. He's the warrior on our behalf.
Yeah.
So let's praise him.
It's interesting too, you know, this phrase, he's a man of war, just by itself, you can imagine all sorts of things by this phrase.
Mm-hmm.
But in context of everything we've been talking about, he wants to rescue the oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
He gives Pharaoh all these chances, and he's ultimately letting Pharaoh's and Egypt's own folly undo them.
Yeah, that's right.
That's his method of war.
Yeah, or he commissions creation itself to rebel against evil.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's the waters, right, that swallow him up.
Mm. And to celebrate when that becomes your own victory, then that feels like such a moment of justice and things made right.
That's right.
And that's what they're doing here. They're celebrating it.
In fact, it's just that image of Yahweh as the man of war that gets developed in the next part of this opening section here, verses 6 and following. I'll pick it up. Your right hand, Yahweh, is majestic in power. Your right hand, Yahweh, shatters the enemy. In your great excellence, you tear down those who rise up against you. You send out hot anger. It eats them like chaff.
Yeah.
So the hand of a warrior is the image of shattering, which is, it's got to be an echo back to the crushing, the shattering of the head of the snake from Genesis 3:15. So we go back to retelling the story. Verse 8, at the wind of your nostrils, the waters piled up. The flowing waters stood like a heap. The deeps congealed in the heart of the sea. Or some years ago when we were talking, you'd really took a liking to this line.
Yeah. Well, because you said that word was the word for gelatin.
Yeah.
And so just this picture of the waters congealing like gelatin.
Yeah.
That was pretty wow. Yeah. And then the wind of the nostrils is a great line. But basically his breath.
Yeah.
His ruach coming through his face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Verse 9, the enemy said, I will pursue and overtake. I will divide spoil. My desire will be filled. I'll draw out my sword. My hand will dispossess. But you blew with your wind. The sea covered them. They sank like lead in the mighty waters.
Mm.
So this image of sinking like a stone or sinking like lead,
mm-hmm.
is the last line of the first and the third parts of this opening are about the image of sinking into the deep waters like a stone. Okay, there you go. Okay. First, we just retold the story.
So that's how much of the poem? Is that half the poem?
That's the first third.
It's the first third.
First third. And then there's a short little hinge pivot.
Okay.
Okay, I'll let you read it. It's verses 11 through 13.
Okay. Who is like you among the Elohim, Yahweh? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, feared in praises, working wonders? You stretched out your right hand, the land swallowed them. In your loyal love, you led the people that you redeemed. In your strength, you guided them to your holy pasture.
Mm.
You could hear so many like psalms in here too.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's right. So first of all, what other Elohim has ever done such a thing? What other gods have ever displayed this kind of rescue and power and mercy to the oppressed? So you sent out your right hand, swallowed them. So you dealt with the bad guys, but then with that same right hand, with your loyal love and power, and then there's these two images that go forward.
Yeah. We're moving forward now somewhere.
Yeah. So stretching out the right hand and swallowing them, that's what just happened.
That's the road out.
Linking back. Here, we're talking about the road in. You led the people you redeemed. Oh, what's fascinating in the Hebrew verb forms here, they're not imperfect or future-oriented. They're just standard past tense verbs. Really interesting.
Meaning?
Well, God hasn't led and guided them
to
a holy pasture yet in the narrative.
Okay.
But from the perspective of the poem,
they've
referred
done
to
it
as if it's done. You led your people, you guided them to your holy pasture.
I see. No, and they're not at the holy pasture.
Mm-mm.
They're at the beginning of the wilderness journey.
And just in case we're wondering, what's the holy pasture?
Mm-hmm.
We come now to the last third of the poem.
Okay.
The peoples have heard. They tremble. Anguish has gripped the inhabitants of Philistia. The chiefs of Edom were dismayed. The leaders of Moab, trembling grips them. All the inhabitants of Canaan have melted away. Terror and dread fallen them by the greatness of your arm. They are silent like a stone. Let's pause right there. So I think we just got an identification of the holy pasture where the people are going.
By the people who are there.
Because we're now get supported of the people who are there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're dismayed and trembling because...
The peoples have heard. So it's as if the report of the mighty acts of Yahweh are going to spread, because who among the gods is like Yahweh?
I mean, okay.
So when the people hear what Yahweh did to Egypt, and then that he led the people through the wilderness and to this land.
Okay, and they're coming to our land.
They're coming to our land?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And they also are like stones. They're described as stones.
They get lumped in with the Pharaoh in a way.
Right.
Like
yeah.
They're also like lumped in as the bad guys
in
this poem.
Yeah. They're the bad guys who are waiting, who are going to hear the report.
Yeah.
And they too will be like stones. That is silent like stones.
Yeah.
So there's this analogy being set up that the past victory of the Exodus, where God's hand brought victory and the enemy sank like stone. And now you have future Pharaoh-like leaders, but in the land of Canaan, in the land where they're headed. And those people will be dealt with by God's arm and also be like stones.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the book of Joshua.
Mm.
Like what this is referring to is what you read about in Joshua.
Yeah.
So this was one of those things all the way back is, what's the Exodus story?
Okay.
Is it just the road out? But here in this poem, the road out is intimately connected to the road between that leads to the road to the land. And in that land, there's going to need to be a whole other new deliverance from the little pharaohs. We're just naming all the bad guys of Joshua and Judges here. The Philistines, the Edomites, the Moabites, and the Canaanites who are going to attack the Israelites as they come into the land. So the poem finishes. Terror and dread's going to fall on all of them. until your people pass over, Yahweh, until your people that you purchase pass over, you, Yahweh, you will bring them, your purchased people, you will plant them in the mountain of your inheritance. There's that promised land.
Okay, now it's called a mountain.
Yeah, and it's given three more names. The place of your dwelling that you made, mm-hmm. the holy place, Lord, that your hands have established. Last line, Yahweh reigns as the king forever and ever. Hmm.
Your people will pass over. You're saying that's about getting to the promised land.
Yeah. It's talking about the passage through the wilderness.
Okay, into so that's the road between into the road, yep. The road yep. in. And then the purchased, you're saying at the heart of this, and we'll get into redemption a lot more later, but this is this idea of being redeemed.
Yep, paying the price to purchase their freedom.
So they're passing through because they've been redeemed, and then they're being brought in. Mm-hmm. The road in is called the mountain.
A mountain garden. They get planted on a mountain.
They get planted on a mountain. Yeah, is that the same phrase from Genesis 2?
Yes. Yeah. God planted a garden and then puts Adam in the garden that he planted.
Okay.
Yeah. Whereas here, he plants the people. The people are the plants that are going to grow on a holy mountain where Yahweh dwells that is their inheritance.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And it's a royal holy dwelling because Yahweh is king there.
They are the mountain garden.
Yeah. The effect of this poem, it's like a teaser, a little short teaser at the end of like a movie.
Yeah.
Where the last
thing— All the Easter eggs of the next movie are there.
Yeah. But it's saying the movie you just watched, let me retell that.
Mm.
And what do we learn about Yahweh from that? Man, he's this kind of God. And the thing that you just saw, guess what? It's going to have to happen again because there's a bunch more pharaohs waiting in the land that they're going to. So the road into the promised land will also need to replay itself, the whole cycle within that part of the cycle going in.
Wow.
But it's like a little teaser. And all of a sudden, the story launches you to read forward all the way to Joshua to see the true resolution of the road out. Doesn't happen at Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
It happens once we get the people planted in a mountain garden.
Kind of strikes me, too, that this first movement of the Exodus story then, which is the road out, has itself, in a way, all the beats of the road out, the road between the road in.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the road out of Egypt is kind of like when the Pharaoh first says, yes, get out. And then they're traveling along.
Oh, yeah, that's
kind of
right.
The road between.
That's right. Yeah, just for like half a chapter.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's not really focused on. And then they get to the final passage into what you think might be final deliverance, but you find out it's the wilderness.
Yeah.
And in the same way, once they get to the promised land, they kind of realize, oh, this is now a new wilderness for us.
Yeah. Exodus stories within Exodus stories.
Yeah.
Within Exodus stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, that's the perfect place to go next, then, is we're going to survey Joshua and Judges for moments where the confrontations that Israel has with the Canaanites there and the battles, many of those battles, they're all framed and told in the language of the deliverance from Egypt so that the kings of Canaan are depicted as new oppressive pharaohs from which Israel needs to be delivered. And in a way, it's like an exodus within a larger exodus.
Thanks for listening to Bible Project Podcast. Next week, we'll look at what happens when Israel enters the land of promise. This is supposed to be the moment of relief and celebration, but it turns out there's more danger waiting for them.
The book of Joshua is being framed as like an inverse exodus. The road into the land becomes a backward sequence of the road out of Egypt. The road in between becomes like a pivot. They've come out of the wilderness, and now they're going through a body of water, but not away from danger, into danger.
Bible Project is a crowdfunded nonprofit, and we exist to experience the Bible as a unified story that leads to Jesus. Everything that we make is free because of the generous support of thousands of people just like you. Thank you so much for being a part of this with us.
Hi, my name is Laura, and I'm from Detroit, Michigan. I first heard about Bible Project from the Read Scripture app, And that's still what I use Bible Project for today, is the Bible overview videos. My favorite thing about the Bible Project is just the story format in every video. It's so easy to follow and enjoyable to watch. We believe the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus. We're a crowdfunded project by people like me. Find free videos, articles, podcasts, classes, and more on the Bible Project app and at BibleProject.com.
Hey everyone, this is Christopher. I handle communications for our patron care team at Bible Project. I've been working at Bible Project for 4 years, and my favorite part about my work is getting to write the prayer email that gets sent out to 80,000 people each month who are praying for our studio and the work that we do. There's a whole team of people that bring the podcast to life every week. For a full list of everyone who's involved, check out the show credits in the episode description, wherever you stream the podcast, on our website.
Jy is ingeskakel by die ABBO-program Krag van die Bybel. Ons het nou net geluister na die potgooi van Bible Projects en ons gaan dit ook nou werklik toepas op 'n reflekterende wyse, op 'n mediterende wyse, wanneer ons kyk na Matteus 1 van vers 18 tot 25. As jy Bybel naby jou het, trek hom nader, of as jy dit op toepassing lees, maak het gerus op Matteus 1 vers 18 tot 25, wat ons eers dan saam gaan lees vanmore. Dit is baie belangrik ook hierdie gesprek wat ons nou net geluister het, van Tim en John en Carissa, want dit is so belangrik, dat wanneer mens die Bybel lees, en dit so vreemd op die ore miskien klink baie keer, dat ons verstaan waar kom die Bybelskrywer vandaan. Want ek dink die gebrek aan kennis ook daarin het al baie keer aanleiding gegee dat mense die Bybel op verkeerde wyse verklaar, verstaan en selfs gebruik ook. En dan om vir hulle self sin te maak en dan eintlik op 'n ander spoor gaan as wat die Here bedoel het met daardie bepaalde boek of gedeelte wat jy lees. Ons gaan nou kyk vandag na Matteus 1 en ons lees van vers 18 en ek gebruik nou vir ons hier die 2020 vertaling, Afrikaanse vertaling van Matteus. Die geboorte van Jesus Christus het so gebeur. Toe Maria, sy moeder, reeds aan Josef verloof was, maar nog voordat hulle gemeenskap gehad het, het dit gebleik dat sy swanger geraak het uit die Heilige Gees. Omdat Josef haar man wetsgetrou was, maar haar nie in die openbaar wou verneder nie, het hy besluit om in die geheim van haar te skei. Terwyl hy daaroor nagedink het, het daar skielik 'n engel van die Here in 'n droom aan hom verskyn en gesê: Josef, seun van David, moenie bang wees om Maria as jou vrou by jou te neem nie, want wat in haar verwek is, is uit die Heilige Gees. Sy sal geboorte gee aan 'n seun, en jy moet hom Jesus noem, want hy sal sy volk van hulle sondes verlos. Dit het alles gebeur sodat wat die Here deur die profeet gesê het, vervul kan word. Kyk, die maagd sal swanger word en 'n seun in die wêreld bring en hulle sal hom Immanuel noem. Want as dit vertaal word, beteken God is met ons. Josef het uit die slaap wakker geword. Toe het hy gemaak soos die engel van die Here hom beveel het en haar as sy vrou by hom geneem. Hy het nie met haar gemeenskap gehad totdat sy aan 'n seun geboorte gegee het nie. En hy het hom Jesus genoem. 'N gedeelte wat ons baie in hierdie tyd van die jaar of na die December ook lees, die hele verhaal rondom die geboorte van Jesus. Lukas verhaal hier dieselfde gedeelte, hierdie gebeure, maar dan nie uit Josef se oë nie en sy belewenis hiervan nie, maar Maria en haar opgewondenheid en dit wat die Here vir haar dan oopgemaak het. En dit is baie belangrik om te sien, hulle kom van verskillende oogpunte uit om dieselfde verhaal te vertel. En hulle probeer dit ook nie eens anders maak as soos wat hulle dit gehoor het en verstaan het en weet die waarheid is. So dit is belangrik ook dan vir ons, dat ons verstaan hier in Matteus, omdat ons nou met Matteus vanmore gaan daaroor nadink en werklik gaan mediteer en reflekteer. Matteus gee deur Josef se oë 'n duidelike verhaal van Josef wat uitvind sy verloofde is swanger voordat hulle gemeenskap gehad het. En dan is dit duidelik dat daar vrees en ongemak is by hom. Ja, ons weet dat mense baie vreemde gevolgtrekkings oor hierdie gedeelte, hierdie geskiedenis gemaak het oor die eeue heen in die kerk en in die wêreld. Mense het gekom by standpunte soos maagdelikheid is beter as die huwelik. En daarom moet 'n mens celibaat wees. En baie verskillende afleidings wat mense gemaak het. Maar Matteus en Lukas dan ook vertel die storie soos hulle dit ken. Soos dit die mense in die tyd toe hulle dit geskryf het na Christus, dit geken het en geweet het, dis waar. Hulle het sekerlik geweet dat in hierdie heidenwêreld waarin hulle geleef het, dat hulle 'n risiko neem. Daar's baie stories vertel van helde wat gebore is, wat 'n God as 'n vader gehad het in plaas van 'n menslike vader. Ek onthou baie jare gelede, in my tyd het ons nog die Skatkis gelees. Ek weet nie of van julle ook so oud is dat hulle dit kan onthou nie, die Skatkis. En dan het hy mens baie van hierdie stories daar gelees van hierdie Griekse God wat dan met hierdie mens seksueel verkeer het en dan is daar 'n mens God gebore. Daar was baie van hierdie stories in die antieke tyd en Matteus weet sekerlik en Lukas dan ook dat hulle 'n risiko neem wanneer hulle hierdie verhaal vertel. En dan vra mens maar, hoekom sal hulle dit dan vertel terwyl dit so misbruik kon word? En dan weet 'n mens dat hulle dit vertel het omdat hulle geweet het dis waar. Ons lees selfs en ek wil dit tog graag vir ons ook net daai vers uithaal. Ons lees selfs in Johannes Johannes 8 vers 41 lees ons waar die waar hierdie woorde staan waar Jesus ook vir die Jode wat nie in hom geglo het nie dit duidelik maak dat in vers hulle sê vir hom, ons vader is Abraham. Jesus sê vir hulle, as julle werklik kinders van Abraham was, in vers 39, Johannes 8 vers 39, as julle werklik kinders van Abraham was, sou julle nie die dade van Abraham gedoen het nie. Maar nou probeer julle my doodmaak, vir my wat die waarheid wat ek by God gehoor het aan julle verkondig. Dit het Abraham nie gedoen nie. Julle doen die dade van julle vader. En natuurlik verwys Jesus hier na die bose, na Satan. Dis julle vader. Julle doen die dade van julle vader. Hulle, die Jode, het toe vir hom gesê, ons is nie uit hoerery gebore nie. Ons is een vader. Ons het een vader, namelijk God. Dit hoor julle, selfs hier in Johannes se tyd, in die tyd na Christus, waar dit so duidelik was dat hierdie story rondgegaan het, van dat Jesus, wat eintlik suggereer, dat Maria seksueel oortree het voor haar huwelik met Josef. So dit is vir ons baie duidelik dat daar een baie groot risiko is vir hulle, vir Matteus en Lukas om hierdie story te vertel. En hulle het geweet van hierdie stories in hulle tyd wat rondgegaan het en vertel is. Wanneer hulle hierdie opskryf. Maar hulle kom in die hele boek van Matteus, wat gaan dat Jesus die Messias is, oor sy koninkryk. Hulle vra dus eintlik vir die lesers, vir mense, vir jou en vir my, glo jy dat die lewende God so iets kan doen, dat hy deur 'n wonderwerk, deur die Heilige Gees in Maria, babe kan vorm en dat daardie babe gebore kan word deur die vrou Maria. En Matteus kom baie mooi en duidelik vertel hy hierdie storie. En vra hy ons ook dat ons dit moet lees in die lig van die hele geskiedenis van Israel. Een story wat vertel in die Ou Testament, en dwars deur die Ou Testament, dat God altyd teenwoordig was, en dat hy gewerk het op 'n verrassende manier. En nou is hy hier teenwoordig, in Jesus se story, nog meer so, nog meer intens, nog meer helder en krachtig en duidelik as nog ooit voorheen, dat hy hier is en hy is teenwoordig. En dink daaraan dan, as ons sy storie lees hier en geluister het ook hier saam na Matteus 1 vers 18 tot vers 25, dat hy, Jesus, het 'n geweldige impak op die wêreld van sy tyd gemaak. Maar nog meer so, nadat hy opgevaar het in die hemel, en sy gees in volheid, op in mense kom woon het, die gelowiges, en dat die story van God wat teenwoordig is, aangaan en aangaan tot vandag. As ons dus, wanneer ons hier oor reflekteer en mediteer, dan lees ons wat hier staan, en ons verstaan dit in die konteks wat Matteus dit skryf. En dan word dit eintlik nog kragtiger, wanneer ons dit lees. En nog duideliker vir ons, dat Jesus gebore is, deur die spesiale optrede van die Heilige Gees in Maria, en dat hy waarlik God en mens is. En dan kom ons altyd, daar julle ons drie vrae wat ons vrae wanneer ons mediteer. Wat staan hier geskryf? Dit waaroor ons nou gesels het met mekaar. En dan sê ons maar, die tweede vraag is, wat sê dit van God? Wanneer ons dan hierdie lees in die konteks wat Matteus dit skrywe, met ander woorde in die lig van die Joodse kultuur en die geskiedenis oor die eeuwe heen wat opgeteken is in die Ou Testament, dan noem hy twee name. Hy noem in die eerste plek Jesus. Vers 18, so begin hy, die geboorte van Jesus Christus. Christus, wat dan die Griekse vorm is van die Hebreëse woord Messiah. Jesus, wat eintlik 'n baie gewilde naam was in daardie tyd, wat Matteus skryf. Dit is dieselfde naam as Josua. Josua wat die Israeliete uit die beloofde land gelei het nadat Moses gesterwe het. En Jesus is die Moses, die werklike Moses, die Moses wat nou gekom het. Hy is die een vir Matteus wat die wet wat Moses ontvang het kom vervul. Die wet wat nooit werklik vervul is, die nooit ten volle gehoorsaam is nie. Dwars deur die geskiedenis tot nou. Hy is die een wat sy mense gaan red. Die Moses wat sy mense gaan red. Nie van die slawerny uit Egipte nie, maar nou uit die slawerny van die sonde. Nie die slawerny van Babylon nie, wat die gevolg was van juist die ongehoorsaamheid aan die wet, aan die wil van die Here, om die Here te vertrou. Ja, nie net verlossing uit Babylon nie, nie, maar die verlossing van hulle eie harte en ons harte, die eie begeertes en vrese, die vrymaak uit dit wat ons harte vashou. Maar dan ook kom die tweede naam wat Matteus hier noem, Immanuel. En ons lees dan, interessant uit Jesaja, want dit kom uit Jesaja 7 vers 14 en Jesaja 8 vers 8, word hierdie woord, hierdie naam gebruik, Immanuel. En dis nie 'n naam wat mense eintlik vir hulle kinders gegee het nie, want dit was eintlik so bietjie voorop die wa om dit te doen, om te sê, maar hierdie kind wat nou gebore is, is God met ons. So dit is nie vir iemand anders gegee nie. Mense het dit nie eintlik gebruik nie. Maar dit is die naam wat Matteus gebruik vir Jesus. So die oomblik dat hy dit doen, spits mense hulle ore. Ons lees in Jesaja 7 vers 14. Die Here sal daarom self vir julle 'n teken gee. 'N jong vrou sal swanger word en 'n seun in die wêreld bring, en sy sal hom Immanuel noem. Wonderlik, hoor julle nou, hier kom die konteks uit waarin Matteus is, en nou verstaan ons skielik baie helderder hoekom Matteus hierdie twee name gebruik vir Jesus. En Immanuel word ook in Jesaja 8 vers 8 gebruik. Hy sal Juda binnendring, die hele land oorstroom, en daardeur vloei totdat hy skouerhoogte bereik. Hy sal sy vlerke uitsprei totdat dit jou land heeltemal oordek. Immanuel, God met ons. En weet julle, wanneer ons, dit is eintlik so wonderlik, wanneer een mens net die woord hoor, en die krag van die woord hoor, en die rykheid daarvan hoor, wat ons nooit in 'n lewenstyd eers kan uitput nie. Hierdie Immanuel, God met ons, is ook die hele tema wat dwars deur hierdie evangelie van Matteus gaan. En dan luister net, hoe sluit hy die hele boek Matteus af. Vers 28, hoofstuk 28 vers 20. Ek lees van vers 19, gaan dan en maak disippels van al die nasies, deur hulle te doop in die naam van die Vader, van die Seun en van die Heilige Gees, en hulle te leer om alles te onderhou wat ek julle beveel het, en kyk, ek is met julle, al die dae, tot aan die volleinding van die tyd. Hoor julle, ek is met julle, al die dae. Hierdie name beteken dus, dat God sê, ek is nie op 'n afstand betrokke nie. Ek is baie aktief by julle betrokke op 'n verrassende manier. Kom ons luister nou eers na musiek en dan gaan ons verder met hierdie meditering. Jy is ingeskakel by die ABBA-program Krag van die Bybel. En ons het nou net in die vorige gedeelte het ons gesels oor wanneer ons mediteer oor Matteus 1 vers 18 tot 25 dat Matteus eintlik so groot risiko neem om hierdie verhaal te vertel van die Heilige Gees wat hierdie wonderwerk doen. God wat hierdie wonderwerk in Maria doen en hierdie kindjie gebore word. Maar dat hy dan eintlik sê hoe verrassend en eintlik op 'n manier wat die mens dit nie verwag nie. En die Israeliete en die Jode in Jesus se tyd beslis dit nie verwag het nie, want hulle het hierdie Messias verwag wat die Romeinse Ryk gaan omgooi en Israel gaan gevestig word as die sentrale nasie waaruit almal dan geseën gaan word. Matteus wil dus nou deur die naam Jesus so pertinent te gebruik hier. Dis eintlik nou vir die Joodse lesers, die gemeentes wat ontstaan het, die mense van sy tyd, wil hy eintlik nou sê, hierdie Jesus is Moses, is die Moses eintlik wat sy mense gaan red van slawerny. Nie van die slawerny in die Egipte nie, maar die slawerny van die sonde. Nie die Babylon slawerny nie, omdat Israel nie die Here se wet gehoorsaam het nie, die Tora nagekom het nie. Maar hy kom, hierdie Jesus, die verlosser, kom om hulle harte, die sowernei in hulle harte te breek, die begeertes en vrese wat hulle so beheers. Dit is die een naam wat dan so uitspring wanneer 'n mens lees, hierdie gedeelte lees. En die tweede naam, Immanuel, wat dan duidelik kom uit Jesaja 7 vers 14 en Jesaja 8 vers 8. Dit is 'n bietjie anders as die naam Jesus wat so pertinent hier genoem word. Immanuel is 'n naam wat mense nie vir hulle kinders in daardie tyd gegee het nie. Want dit is so bietjie voorbarig om jou kind te noem God met ons. Maar hier kom Matteus nou in die evangelie van Matteus met hierdie tema. Die tema van God is met ons. Van die eerste hoofstuk tot die laaste hoofstuk kom hierdie tema elke keer uit. In Matteus 28 vers 20 sê die Here dan wanneer hulle uitstuur om sy disippels mense, al die mense sy disippels te maak en hulle te leer, dan sê hy, ek is met julle. So, wat hierdie twee name dus vir ons eintlik sê, is dat God hier, Matteus beklemtoon dit, ek is nie 'n God wat op 'n afstand betrokke is nie. Ek is by julle, ek is met julle. En nou, luisteraars, daar waar julle ook in julle eie omstandighede is, wat moeilik kan wees, wat maklik kan wees, julle kan in hartseer wees, julle kan in vreugde wees. Maar die Here kom en hy sê, ek is hier by jou. Ek is betrokke by jou. Op 'n verrassende manier. 'n Manier wat jy nie verwag nie. Net soos wat die Israeliete, die Jode, nie verwag het dat Jesus op hierdie manier, dat God op hierdie manier Immanuel by ons sal wees nie. Net so ook verras hy ons op 'n wyse wat net bo mense denke uitgaan en jou verwagtinge. Hy kom en hy sê, ek verlos mense. Ek maak hulle vry waar hulle hulpeloos vasgevang is. Ek gee 'n nuwe onverwagte manier, 'n nuwe manier om vorentoe te gaan, om te lewe as my kind, gevul deur my gees. Ek vervul al my beloftes deur my liefde en genade. En dit wat hy later ook wat Paulus in Romeine 8 skryf, dat niks ons van die liefde van God kan skei nie. Dit is God met ons. En ja, my gebed is baie dikwels, Here, gee dat ek dit wat u doen, hoe u belofte nakom, dat ek dit sal sien, dat ek dit nie sal mis nie. Want u maak ons lewe vol. U bring 'n nuwe wyse van lewe op hierdie aarde. U het ons geleer. Laat my wil geskied op aarde soos in die hemel, nou reeds. En Matteus beklemtoon het ons alreeds gesien hierdie verrassende manier waarop God werk. En daarom, dis wat hy dit sê vir my van God. Hy is my verlosser wat die bande kom breek het, Jesus. Hy is Immanuel, God met my. En hy doen dit op hierdie onverwagte maniere in my lewe. Jy kan God nooit in 'n blikkie druk nie. Dis wat Matteus eintlik ook hier sê. Jy moet elke dag, eintlik soos Jesaja ook bid, Here, gee dat ek maak my wakker in die oggend en leer my dat ek u kan sien in watter omstandigheid ook al. Want dan in ons meditering in hierdie gedeelte wat ons saam gelees het, kom ons by die laaste vraag, wat sê dit dan van my? Wat sê dit vir my, hierdie gedeelte? Hierdie gedeelte sê vir my, glo ek dat Jesus mens geword het, maar dat hy ook God is, dat hy gebore is uit Maria deur die spesiale werking van die Heilige Gees. Glo jy dit? Miskien weet jy dit. Maar hier kom hy en hy sê vir ons, glo jy dit? Glo ek dat Jesus my verlos het van die slawerny van die sonde? Of probeer ek nog self hierdie skuld wegwerk? Hierdie skaamte oor my sonde? Of glo ek dat hy my vrygemaak het en dat niks my kan skei van sy liefde meer nie? Dat hy my vrygemaak het van die sondes wat my nog vashou ook. Die verslaafdheid wat ek nou nog belewe, dat hy dit deurbreek. En dat ek kan weet dat ek dit kan oorwin deur hom, deur sy gees in my. My hart kan nie meer gevange wees en bly deur die bose nie. Daar is nie 'n manier nie. Ja, ek kan nog wegdraai van die Here af, maar ek kan nie daar bly nie. Sy liefde trek my om terug te draai na hom toe. En nou moet ons dit weet ook, geliefde luisteraars, dat hy op 'n verrassende manier jou en my losmaak van dit wat ons hier vashou. En wanneer ek belofte van die Here kry, dat ek oop sal wees, dat hy dit op sy manier, die beste manier gaan doen. En dit kan ek vir julle sê, die Here gee nooit vir ons die tweede beste nie. Al is ek in watter omstandighede, hy gee vir my die beste, sodat ek hom kan leer ken, sodat hierdie geloof dat hy my verlosser is, die werking van die Gees in my net kragtiger word. En dan bid ons saam vanaand, of vanoggend, of vanmiddag, of wanneer jy ook al hierna luister. Here, ek bid. Ek praat met U. U wat my verlosser is. En ek wag op U om my te antwoord. Op U tyd die beste tyd. Om te sê vir my, ek wat soek, hier is ek, en dat ek hier sal raak sien, en die stem sal hoor. En wanneer ek klop en klop, by U klop, want U is die enigste verlosser, die Yeshua, Jesus, en dat U die deur oopmaak, en ek kry dit wat die beste is. Dat ek soek, en dat ek kyk, en dat ek vra, na dit wat U wil doen in my lewe. Dankie Here, dat U so amazing Here is. En ek gee dat ek nie so vasgevang sal wees nie Here, in my eie begeertes en vrese, in my eie denke van hoe ek dink dinge moet wees, en dit wat ek eintlik behoort te wees. Here, dat ek nie so vasgevang hierin sal wees nie, Here, dat ek U nie sal herken, wanneer U my nooi en oopmaak, wanneer U my vul en aan my nuwe oë gee, om anders na die wêreld te kyk, anders na die mense om my te kyk, dat ek nie in klein geloof sal dink nie, Here, dat dit onmoontlik is nie. Want U is so anders. U is Immanuel. U is by ons, altyd. Altyd met ons. Amen. Dankie dat U saam met my gemediteer het oor hierdie gedeelte en ook geluister het na die potgooi van Bible Projects. Ons gaan verder met Matteus volgende week en luister na hoe ons op 'n ander manier die woord van die Here kan hoor en die krag van die Gees, die krag van sy woord kan ervaar. Dit is so lekker om met julle te gesels oor hierdie belangrikste boek in die wêreld. Ons gesels dan volgende week weer saam.
Hierdie inset was aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.